today to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton Cuff, hit me, cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade.
Hey, Kanagito. All my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, this episode of Native Roots Radio is presented in partnership with Minneapolis Public Radio and Little Moments Count. Little Moments Count is a statewide collaboration focused on helping parents and caregivers learn about the importance of brain development in the first 3 years of life. Nearly 80% of the brain growth happens in the first 1,000 days. And small moments of interaction like talking, playing, reading, singing help create the pathways that build a child's brain during the early stages of life. And we got our friend Barb Fabre is the CEO of Indigenous Visioning and All Nations Rise. She's an enrolled member at the White Earth Ojibwe Nation in northern Minnesota and where she resides. And Barb, you've been on a few times here on Native Roots Radio, and it's always great, and I always learn so much about this. And you know, Wendy and I are now grandparents, and I'm Choka, and they're 18 months old, the twins, and it's just, you know, it's great having you on talking about these things and reaffirming and learning about early child development. Thank you so much, Barb.
Oh, miigwech. Yeah, isn't it fun being a grandparent? I absolutely love it. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, you know, for the listeners that are not familiar with your work, can you tell us what you do and why you're so passionate about early years child life, especially those first 5 years?
Well, sure. Just like Little Moments Count. You know, we need to really share to the world how important those first 5 years are. That's what shapes our babies' brains, and it shapes them for life. So those first 5 years are so critical. They need a lot of attention, they need a lot of love, they need a lot of social emotional self-regulation skills. I mean, I used to work for Indian Child Welfare, and I had to remove children from their home, and I did not like that one bit. And I just told myself, you know, or asked myself, where are the programs that are supposed to be out there to help families before they get to this point? So I got into early childhood shortly after that, and that's where I've been. And brain development and research came out in the late 90s, and I'm hooked. So I love it.
Definitely. Well, that's awesome. And then, you know, we hear a lot about how important the early years are for children. Can you explain in simple terms for me, because, you know, I'm kind of simple, what's actually happening in the child's brain during those first 5 years, and why is this time so critical?
Well, you know, we've got to... it is almost a critical and emergency situation, because, you know, there's communities that don't have high quality tribal early childhood services, and those are so critical to children and families. We need to help our youngest citizens learn to read. There's a huge word gap, especially with our brown children, and when they don't have an early childhood experience and they arrive at kindergarten, chances are they are not ready for school. So that's what 0 to 5 programs do, tribal early childhood, and those are designed to help children not only be ready for school, but just to scaffold on what they've already learned. And if they arrive at kindergarten without those skills and, you know, we're setting them up to fail, and it's almost impossible for them to catch up. And that's where we see all these dropout rates, low graduation rates with our Indigenous communities. So we can do something about it. It's just, it's that important.
Yeah, you know, speaking of doing something about, there's a new national document that you've worked on with other leaders that says tribes, not state or federal governments, should be the ones deciding how to care for and educate the youngest children. You know, tell us a little bit about that. That's awesome. And being a former high school teacher, I can really appreciate that verbiage right there.
Oh, 100%. Well, this is kind of like a lifelong effort of myself and Linda Smith. She's my mentor and friend, and we've gotten into some good trouble over the years.
Yeah.
And this was our idea that we've been thinking about a long time. We did the document when she was at the Bipartisan Policy Center on early childhood systems and how the formula for tribal funding is so backwards, and how our tribal communities in the urban communities are not receiving any services. So we just wanted to highlight that with that one. Now this document, it's called Native Nations Honoring Culture and Shaping Futures for Children and Families. It's a national agenda for tribal early childhood development and practice prioritizing tribal leadership in early childhood systems. I've been working towards this. We feel that tribal leaders are absolutely the people, just like parents, are the voice that we need. So this document is geared to show, to support tribal leaders in their efforts in creating high quality early childhood systems in their own backyard. And it also goes a little step further and helps shows states and federal government how they can support tribal leadership in creating those high quality early childhood programs.
Well, Barb, you know, the document says that this work is not just a program, it's a movement of reclamation and renewal. That's powerful language. I really like to hear that. That's unpacked. And what does that mean to someone just hearing this for the first time?
Well, you know, it's a toolkit for tribal leaders. We, you know, tribal leaders are so spread out. You know, they've got to be experts on everything because, you know, they have to advocate for everything in their own backyards and their tribal governments and their communities. So we know it's hard for them to really be an expert. And if they don't know anything about early childhood, this is a document for them. It's a short document. It's an easy document. We have talking points. We have recommendations. When they're talking, you know, on our behalf in Washington, D.C., or at those tribal consultations, you know, we want to help them know what to say and what the priorities are in early childhood.
Well, that's beautiful. Hey, I want to take a quick break. We're here with Barb Fabre, and Barb is a great guest. And we're talking about, you know, Little Moments Count. We're talking about things like that. But Barb's also with, you know, All Nations Rise and Indigenous Visioning. Boy, that's hard for me to say today. Indigenous Visioning. But hey, we're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk a little bit more, because this is so important. And I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the urban communities, too. So we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio with our friends at Little Moments Count. We'll be right back.
elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come. We are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice and through generations no longer know who they are.
To those who search and never find. To those that turn away the so-called non-accepted. To those that bring us together. And to those living outside, keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people, to those that give up and those who do not care, to those who abuse themselves and others, and those who revive again, to those who are physically, mentally, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth,
to those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even our own.
To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other.
To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us who don't know better.
To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty.
To the young, the old, the living, and the dead.
To our brothers and sisters and all living things across Mother Earth,
and her beauty we've destroyed. And denied the honor that the Creator.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot, and this is Native Roots Radio. Hey, we are with our friends, Dr. Stately from the Native American Community Clinic, almost said Development Institute again, and Sarah Anderson. Great to have you both on, and I was just really... You know, we talk about what you guys do, but I really want to talk more about what you guys do. And I had an opportunity just to stop in for a few minutes, what was happening this weekend, and just to see what's going on, Dr. Stately. And I think, you know, the work that you guys do and Sarah really needs to be amplified and talked about, especially during these dark times. We really need some positivity. So welcome, Dr. Stately and Sarah.
Thank you. Yeah, Sarah. Sarah was on a couple weeks ago, so most people probably know her, but we should introduce who she is. So Sarah Anderson is our development director, but I'm going to go ahead and let her introduce herself to the listening audience.
Bonjour, everyone. My name is Sarah Anderson. I'm the development director at NAC. I'm from the White Earth Nation, Crank Clan. And yeah, I'm excited to be a guest again today. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, it was great, and great to have you both on, and had a great conversation with you while you were trying to get ready for this big weekend, and was really slowing down your jam with the jokes and stuff, but I thought I'd get you on here and talk about a few things that you do, and why don't we talk a little bit about what happened this weekend and why it's so important and how it's kind of a shift from... something that's needed in the community, because we really try and support our women and our young people, but this is something kind of new that you and Dr. Stately have been working on and doing.
Yeah, I mean, well, this was our fourth year actually of doing this. So it started out with a men's summer camp, and really just answering to the need that was being expressed among men in the community. And so I think as a woman, my role is really to uplift their voices and to help create space for them, to be able to do that. And so, we started with just the summer camps, and now we incorporated also a winter camp because as you know, there's a lot of teachings around the winter time and storytelling. So we found that to be important to do that as well. So this camp takes place generally at either in Mound, Minnesota. There's a camp out there that is able to accommodate a pretty large number of people. And then at that camp, we bring in other Native men to do teachings, like whether it's like in the summertime where it's filleting fish, potentially like this time we skinned rabbits, and then we cook, we make that food. We also do other teachings like, you know, hand drums, drumsticks. We did that, wasna or pemmican making. Yeah, just a lot of good teachings.
Well, Dr. Stately, this kind of came to be where people were kind of asking you, well, what about men? Men need healing. There's people that need to come back to community. And this is kind of a way that you guys are working on to reintroduce the men back into the community, right?
Yeah. Well, it was also, you know, I've been talking to a number of people in the community over the years. I think it's about 4 years ago before we started the camp. And it actually, I would say that it actually happened fairly rapidly. Like, you know, it started with a brief conversation I had with Sarah. I can't remember exactly what the conditions were under that, but we were talking about, you know, her and I, when we're left alone to our, you know, to our dastardly devices, we always come up with stuff. So, you know, we have a few people at the clinic that don't really like us to be sort of like, you know, co-conspirating together because it always means more work for somebody, right? Anyways, but this was a really beautiful experience for us, I think. And I would say that for myself personally, as a Native man, and, you know, and specifically a Native Two-Spirit man, you know, well into my, you know, my later decades in life, you know, I have come to appreciate this more and more every time I go to a camp. And you know, Sarah is the kind of, you know, auntie who will just tell you the truth, right? She'll just say it right to your face, like, you know, not really mince words either. But I remember one time, like, I think I didn't go to the first camp, and I forget the reasons why. It was probably around the same time that I usually go to Sundance or something like that, something to do with my kids probably, because, you know, they were still in high school at the time we started the first camp. But I remember her saying to me, like, you have to come to this camp. You have to come and see what these men are doing, to come and see and be here, right? And, you know, she kind of gave me a little anti-scolding, like, you know, you're a leader in the community. You should be in this space, you know, and be with these men and see what they're doing and experience mm-hmm. it. So, you know, I went to the second one. And, you know, there was just some, over the years, there's been some just really beautiful things that have kind of evolved from this particular camp that we do with men. Mm-hmm. Started with the summer camp, and we, you know, and then one day we're just talking about, like, you know, how, you know, beautiful it was and what an amazing experience was, and men wanted another one, you know. They didn't want to wait for another year either, you know. So she was like, we should just do a winter camp. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Like, how much do you think that's going to cost? And we didn't really have money for it or any of those things, but this woman can make money happen. She can make it. Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. So she's been a total gift to us. But from my perspective, and this really did hit home for me this weekend when I was participating in this men's camp this time around, just the amount of, like, healing that happens for myself, even, you know, I'm in my 60s, and, you know, I'm learning some of these things for the first time alongside them. You know, some of these men are in their early 20s or 30s, you know. And so it's part of it, I think, is a really beautiful thing, is I'm learning along with them. And in that space, I'm not the executive officer of NAC. In that space, I'm just another man in a community of men that are sort of showing up and being there to support one another and, you know, and give love and support and those things. And it's really beautiful. And for me, I think I told Sarah this over the weekend. I said, you know, I grew up, you know, being, you know, bullied and traumatized and all these things by a number of Native men. When I was in boarding school, you know, some of the people that harmed me and physically and sexually assaulted me were Native men. So I carried this sort of like this pain and this ambivalence and this fear of being around Native men in certain spaces. A good portion of my life, I think. And this being in the space with them and being able to be my authentic self and be just who I am, I feel protected in that space. I feel taken care of, you know, couple of those young men were like, you know, helping this old man in and out of the sweat lodge, you know, and things like that. You know? None of them laughed at me when I didn't have any shorts to wear. I had to wear going to the lodge in my chonies.
Oh, I should have been there.
Jeez, Louise. I'll hold a special sacred lodge just for you if you want to see me in my chonies.
Cool.
We'll fundraise off of it.
There you go. It's kind of like a water dunk, outside the...
Sort of, kind of, yeah.
Kind of, but not really. So,
For me, that was like a really big awakening. I had that moment this weekend when I was like in space with them, and I was like, just like, even our darkroom ceremony this weekend was like, I just had a really, it's really powerful. I felt different after I walked out.
And that's what it's all about. Sarah, I was there and I didn't see you. You were up late, you know, a ceremony with everybody. And I couldn't find my hand drum that you made me. So I left and I was kind of mad, I think. No, I wasn't mad. But it was cool. And, the vibe was great, Dr. Stately. And I'm going to give it a big shot to try and come out to the next one in June. What did you say?
Yeah, I'm thinking June or July.
Well, don't make it too hot because, you know, I'll be wearing shorts there and getting too hot in the, you know, the ceremony. But so there was other things.
That's suffering good.
Hey, ho. So I'm going to just pass up rabbit harvesting and talk a little bit about the drum. I saw, in all seriousness, I saw a lot of well-painted drums, and I kind of was like, wow, that's amazing. And just having the opportunity, and I know people had beautiful feathers that they were doing things with, and I believe for myself personally, this would be a great, not only refresher course, but a good course for me to learn these things.
Yes, for sure. And I think there's so many different ways to, you know, make hand drums too, that it kind of gives that opportunity to share like multiple teachings as well. You have to come out, Robert. Yeah.
Yes. Dr. Stately, did you make a hand drum?
I did not. I did not make a hand drum because I was late too. But so you and I will have to go this summer and make a hand drum together if we do hand drum making. But, you know, we have hand drum making. So we don't even, I think one of the things I want to make clear too is like, we don't do these things just once or twice a year during our camps. Our camps are definitely designed specifically, I think, to do all of these kinds of activities and learn together. But they're also intended specifically to build relationship, right? I think the most powerful thing that's happening in those encampments, or in those camps rather, are the men are like building relationships with each other. They're building trust. They know that they have somebody they can rely on when they're struggling, somebody to talk to, somebody can help them through. Many of those men are in early recovery or even in long-term recovery. Like myself, I've been 40 years sober. We need spaces where we can feel confident to be able to do that, where we can be, you know, where we can feel confident that we can rely on somebody to listen to us and know that they're just going to listen. They're not going to judge. They're not going to, tell us what we did wrong, all those things.
Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. We heard Dr. Stately and Sarah Anderson of Native American Community Clinic. We're going to talk more about what the work you do and how great it is, and we'll be right back after the short break. Ho-wa.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
Cruise past the hassles of selling your vehicle by donating it to KFAI. It's easy and free, and we handle all the details. Just call 855-277-2346 or donate online at kfai.careasy.org.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here, and this is Native Roots Radio, and we are here with Sarah Anderson, Development Director here, a White Earth Nation relative, and also Dr. Stately, CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. And we're talking about a little bit about the men's winter camp, but also what else you do. And, you know, when we usually get together, Dr. Stately, we're kind of talking about what's happening in the community and what's happening, you know, nationally and things like that. And I'm glad we have an opportunity to kind of talk about what you and Sarah and the other people that are at the clinic do for our community. So welcome back, you two.
Thank you. I think I want to give some airtime to Sarah here and let her talk a little bit about, like, you know, how we got to the place where we started this, you know, where it came from, and also the work that her team does. She has an amazing team of people. I think, you know, one specific person that we want to make sure we give some shout outs to, because he really is the heart of that camp for the last several years. And we must all let her describe all that and talk about it.
So where this was really born out of too is, you know, I think it's important that the people that do this work, you know, they obviously have a love and appreciation for Native men. And I know, you know, me personally, I've lost a lot of my Native men relatives to substance abuse. And I think that a lot of that work that I'm doing with the men comes from just that love and that that support that I want to give to them as a woman, as a relative, as family. So that's kind of where that kind of started from for me. And then Mizaway Dejarli, he's my accomplice in this work. And he is really, really the best partner in crime that I could, you know, ever have. And his heart is in that as well, and he does a really good job of being a role model too for them, and shares that same vision that we have to really create space for Native men to learn and to develop connections with one another. You have to forgive me, because I actually should have taken a day today to kind of like sit with everything that happened this weekend. I think that that's really important when you're in ceremony, is to, and probably why we have like those like 4 days, you know, that we dedicate, and then we have like a rest, so that I can really take everything in and, you know, give that gratitude to Creator, for everything. So I'm a little bit still like processing everything. It was a really emotional, it always is. It's almost like you ride like this high on like love, and, you know, a healthy high of just everything that happens there and takes place. And I think, I told the men this weekend, like, how much good medicine that they bring, is, you know, specifically to like the group and just everybody who is there and to our communities. And I think they need that uplifting. They need to be reminded of that, especially coming from an Anishinaabe Kwe, that I feel safe with them. And I feel good in that space. They all respect me, and we respect one another. And I just feel really honored and blessed to even be there. It's helped a lot with my healing around, you know, things that have happened to me, whether, you know, it's my dad, how, you know, I kind of grew up with like, you know, crabby old dad kind of thing. And he had his own like trauma and stuff. But, you know, it just really like healed me as well doing this work, which wasn't the intention that I really had. It was really just to uplift their voices and to help support them. And that reciprocity really just occurred kind of like without like that intention for me, where I just started to feel like that healing happening and taking place. And I got to really listen to them being vulnerable, where they talk about like their healing journey and how appreciative that they are to have this space to connect with one another, and to have that like shared respect in that space, as well as like to be able to participate in that ceremony.
Yeah. So do you have returning relatives, or is it different people each time? And I can see, you know, you're working with a crabby elder and Dr. Stately, so that's probably healing too for your father. Oh.
Yes, it really is. We have a lot of, this is all built on trust. And I think that's, too, like another thing that I learned through this work is like our seven teachings. If you notice, like trust isn't one of them, but like all of those seven teachings is what builds trust, honesty, humility, love, respect, you know, that is what builds that trust for us to be able to do this. And, I think, you know, just like sharing those, spaces builds that connection, and we always have people that come back, that return. We also partner with a Native Men's Treatment Center, which is like really awesome to have that connection as well, because then they have kind of that like direct access through that partnership to join us. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, because I know personally, just from personal stories I've heard and myself, is that when people come back to a ceremony, it's such a healing thing, and it's part of recovery. And so that's an amazing thing. So one of the things I want to be careful too, because I hear it fills up really fast too, is to like really advertise when that's going to happen, or because you don't want 5,000 people across the country coming, but that would be a good problem.
Yeah, there's definitely a need for it. And, you know, every year we've like expanded more and more and tried to increase the resources that contribute and make this all possible to put that funding towards being able to accommodate more. So I've seen it grown it's grown big time, and that need is there. And I do want to say, like, it was really beautiful when we went back to NAC to bring like all the lodge blankets and everything back. When we left, we looked up in the sky, and there was on Franklin Avenue, three red-tail hawks circling us. Oh. And one let out a cry, which I won't try to imitate on the radio and embarrass myself.
Well, that'd be good.
And then one dropped a feather oh. down, and my little nephew was standing there, and he caught that feather in his hand. And I think, you know, throughout the weekend, you know, a lot of myself included and these men had many experiences like that where, you know, the Manidu or the spirits were really giving their blessing to that work that we're doing and letting us know that they're watching and that they see what's going on in a good way.
Well, that's awesome, too. When you're spiritually fit, you see things like that and don't think of them as a coincidence. You think of them as really a gift, like you just said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. And I walk the river every day until I hurt my knee a week ago. And there's an eagle that flies over my head almost every day that I go down there. And I don't think I would have seen the sky with my low self-esteem prior to sobering up. And even in my sober days, Dr. Stately, I mean, you know, I like what you said, that there's an opportunity to be honest and non-judging, and that really helps.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I see, I get to see from the perspective of being, you know, just a person in the space with them, kind of, you know, sitting at the tables with them, talking with them, sitting at the fire with them, being in the lodge with them, you know, being in ceremony with them. Those are really beautiful experiences, because it, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people in the community that put me on a pedestal and have some expectations of me because of my role. I'm just a common man, you know, and there's nothing amazing about me other than the fact that I, you know, I'm probably a better dancer than you.
I doubt that. And I doubt that very much.
I don't know.
Are we talking native dancing or our disco era dancing?
Does it matter, really?
It doesn't. Well, yeah. I mean,
I was the one that taught John Travolta how to do those moves. You know?
Here, I thought you were going to say that Prince.
I can't quite do that you know, splits
no,
like that.
No.
But you know, it's just a really beautiful experience to be in that space, you know, and to be, you know, I mean, I think one of the most beautiful gifts that I get out of this whole experience is that, you know, I had some small footprint in this process in terms of sort of like being like, you know, just saying to her like, yeah, go do it, you know, we'll find the money. If we don't have the money, I don't care where we find the money, let's just do it, because it's something that needs to be done. And that's a direct result of me talking to some of my own relatives who are men who had been in prison or who had been in other situations where they didn't really know how to fit into this, into our community, how to find a pathway yeah. back. Mm-hmm. And they were feeling a little lost or something like that. So, you know, I grew up without a father. My father wasn't really in my life, right? I was raised by women, strong Indigenous women who taught me, you know, how to be the man that I am today. But, you know, I'm a father now and I have boys and I've been raising boys for 18 years. And I see how important it is to be a father and how important it is to be present, and how important it is to be in a good place and in your right mind, and, you know, and how much these things that we're learning are important for them to understand as well. And I keep trying to get them to come, and they do come every once in a while, but, you know, unfortunately they're 18 and I can't make them do stuff anymore.
Oh yes, you can. There's blackmail. I'll when we're off air, I'll help you out with that. Sarah, one of the things I think Dr. Stately kind of touched on before we changed the segment was that there's other things that go on too, not just twice a year. Can you talk a little bit about those? Oh, you're on mute somehow. Oh, what?
We do a weekly drum group at NAC on Thursdays, and it's been really beautiful to watch that flourish as well. It started out pretty small, and now it's, you know, consistent, and I think that's really like kind of the proof in the pudding, I think, in our community, is that consistency and being able to sustain programming, which can be challenging when we like depend on the federal government to fund programming. But I've been able to, with, you know, NAC and other partners, been able to make that work out. So, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. We're going to take a break here in 30 seconds, but I love this talk, and it makes me want to, you know, show up in a good way. I know there's language for Ho-Chunk and, on Wednesday nights at their office, and a way to get involved and feel like you're in community and you are community. So I just appreciate this talk, and we're going to come back after this short break. Oh,
Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with our friend Dr. Stately and Sarah Anderson in Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and talking about, you know, the healing of men, which we don't talk a lot about here, and I'm glad we have this you know, well, I feel like I should be Carol Burnett there for a second. I'm glad we had this time together just to have a laugh or sing a song. Seems we just get started and before you know it. You remember that, Dr. Stately, don't you?
Just barely. I was so young when that.
Oh, you're younger than I am, darn it. Notice I said darn it. So... So how do people, Sarah, how do people find out about these things? Where can we point people to, and how do they get a hold of the organization and things like that? Can you give us a little rundown on that?
Yeah, so our Facebook, we do a lot of announcements there. I think coming to Drum Group and just kind of like getting into community and getting involved in that way of being around those men is a really good way to kind of get involved in that. I used to post it, but it would just fill so quick. And so I'm kind of tweaking how we like put that out, because now it just became like a word of mouth thing, which again, I think really speaks to the need of this. Especially everything that's been going on in the world. You know, these men have been out there supporting our communities, and they also need that time to be able to be around ceremony and to rest and refuel so that they can continue to be good medicine to others.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, this year we didn't post at all. We didn't like announce it. It just kind of all word of mouth, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that talks about how powerful it is as well, right? That like people are talking about like, hey, you know, I mean, we just finished the camp and they're already talking about the next camp. Like literally that the last day of the camp, they're like, you know, talking about summer camp already. And, you know, I don't know where we're going to find the money, but, we're going to be honoring our fourth year here, and four is a sacred number. So I was like, one of them was like, well, can't we do it longer? And I was like, yeah, wouldn't it be cool if we could do it for 4 days in honor of the fourth year?
Huh.
You know, kind of a little bit like a, you know, kind of like a, you know, like a, many of our ceremonies we do for 4 days, right? So maybe we can kind of do the same thing. But that means more money. So Sarah's got good work.
And, well, it's interesting.
Make it rain money from the sky.
Well, it's interesting too, and what I really like is that it's free. I used to, when I first sobered up, Dr. Stately, I used to go to a silent retreat, and we'd pay whatever we could. Some people didn't pay anything because they couldn't. Other people, you know, because it was a yearly thing, and it was Thursday to Sunday, and every week they had it, and but we went the same weekend, and it was an amazing thing. You know, how do you a silent retreat? Well, nobody else is talking, so it's a lot easier than it sounds. But I mean, funding like that or people sponsoring.
I was going to ask, like, how did you go to a silent retreat and actually not talk?
Well, I did bring an espresso machine, which was against the law back then, but I wouldn't do that now because I'd probably have a heart attack. But
you probably went to the same men's retreat that I went to. I remember when I living in California, I was doing some men's work and I was out in therapy, and this my therapist, this old guy who's no longer with us, Don Kilhafner, I love him, he changed my life. he was like, oh, you should go to this, you know, to this retreat, and you know, you're going to learn about all kinds of things that are really important for men to know. You know, I mean, you know, it was really based in some of the stuff I was trying to uncover in my own life, you know, growing up without a father, being raised by, you know, a mother who was a single mother, worked really hard, had 7 kids, just, you know, leader in the community. And like, you know, I had a lot of stuff that I needed to figure out in my young life, right? And then the men that were in my life, her boyfriends or my siblings' fathers, were just not good men, not kind men at all, harmful. So I grew up with a really, really bad condition of not being able to trust men whatsoever, right? And so that was a big part. But I remember, like, when my first time going to one of those things, it was like, you know, I can't even remember the guy's name. James Hillman was, I think, the guy that was, he was a big movement in the men's movement back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. I went to this camp and I was like, you know, we're making drums and I'm like dancing and drumming around fires. And there were hardly, if not, I don't think, I swear to God, I think I was the only Indian there, right? And so I was like, contrary to popular belief, we were not naked while we're dancing around those fires, by the way.
It sounds like Burning Man to me.
I know, right? And it's like, I've never done that either. So, this experience, that was a powerful experience when I was younger. But I think one of the things that was really beautiful about this particular, and all the sort of work I've done in my later life and going back into ceremony and participating in my Dakota family that had been hunkered into, their sun dances, those things, that the role that ceremony played, not necessarily in getting me clean and sober, but like maintaining, you know, my ability to be a man in recovery, a sober man, guiding my decision making, helping me to understand what it means to be on this earth and walking this red road and being a good relative to everyone that I can possibly, the best relative I can be at any given moment. That is all that foundational work that I've done, and just, you know, being present and going into, going to ceremony and being involved in those things. It is the last 20 years of my sobriety have been qualitatively different than the first 20 years of my life. My sobriety, because of this, and because I've been able to reconnect to, you know, my original culture, my original instructions, that has really changed my life. And so it's a big part of, I think, why I've championed it and the work that we do, even within the clinic, the integration of traditional healing into our Western medical model, why I'm a strong advocate for that, and the investment in that, and making sure that we have these resources available to all. I think this camp will grow over the years, and I know that, you know, as more men come and they, you know, and, you know, it's not a membership model. You don't have to, it's not like you're signing up for a thing. You just, you come if you need it, you know, it's there. You come if you need it, if you want to be around other men and you want to be in this space, you just come. And we'll, I mean, I think we only had money for 30 people this year, and she found, figure out a way to get 5 more people in there. And, you know, chewed me out for taking a bottle from somebody else. But the point being is that, you know, one of the things I think I love about NAC, and I love about Sarah and my team, everybody in my team, when we see that the community responds to a thing and we see that the community wants a thing, we figure out a way to do it. You know, even like if we don't have a plan for it, we're going to work really, really hard to find that pathway, right? And, you know, one of the things I've learned to do over my life, over the last several years, is, you know, that myself as a human being, I don't have a lot of power. I don't have a lot of things. But when I don't know how I'm going to do a thing, I just say a prayer, put out some tobacco, say a prayer, ask Creator to cut my path or cut our path. And something always comes of that, right? And it's usually almost 100% of the time, it's better than I could have ever imagined it, right?
So. Well, I think we could have gone 2 hours and manifesting things. I've read that that's a real thing.
I do want to say one last thing because I think it's really important. I think too, with this camp, like it, and having this space, creating this space and these men being around, like they can do this, you know, I'm not doing anything special. We're not doing anything special. These are like our inherent rights, as Native people. And, I think that's really important to say. And that's what is being shown to them, that they can also do this, and funding or not, we will find a way.
Wow. Well, you got 35, so I guess I didn't get a hoodie, so I'm still butthurt about the drum, but that'll be the next show we do.
Oh. Hey, you know you got to learn.
There you go. Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Stately and Sarah Anderson. This has really been a great show and very informative.
I'm Lady J, and did you know the first blues hit record was released by a woman? Join us on March 14th for more history from the ladies' side of the story as electronic, pop, Latin, rock, and jazz hosts inspire you with music and history starting at 6 a.m. on Saturday, March 14th. It's an event to raise some fun for KFAI pre-pledge drive. Join us Saturday, March 14th at 6 a.m. And that first blues hitmaker, that was Mamie Smith with the Crazy Blues in 1920.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Uh-huh!
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
The show, we like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunts.
No!
Oh!
Hey, honey G, hey, honey. I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years and has been a co-founder of Native Roots Radio for going on her ninth season here. So, hey, welcome, and take it away.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them, and I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals, formerly known as the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. It's always my pleasure to do that. So I have some fun facts today. We're going to keep it light and talk about some fun animal facts. Now that... what happened here to my fun animal facts... What's happening? Okay. So, did you know that when you hear bird song, birds, your brain is wired to respond to the frequency of bird song? Yeah, for thousands of years, it meant daylight, safety, and no danger nearby. Today, it's still a activates your parasympathetic nervous system, the one responsible for rest, digestion, and regeneration.
What about crickets?
I need to get up earlier so I could listen to the bird songs. I remember that when I was a kid and, you know, we didn't have any air conditioning or anything in our house. So we had the windows open and early in the morning you'd hear the birds singing. And I remember like yelling at my window, shut up.
Oh, geez.
Because they woke me up.
You should do that in Stillwater, too.
But I do, you know, now our windows are closed. We have the AC on and I never hardly hear the birds singing, like, you know, singing in the morning.
That's sad.
So there's this dog, and I've talked about him before in the past, but I came across his name's Odin. So Odin, the hero dog who refused to leave his goats behind during California's Tubbs fire. In 2017, as California's deadly Tubbs fire swept through the North Bay, a great Pyrenees named Odin made the choice that stunned his family. When evacuation orders came, Odin refused to leave his herd of 8 goats despite the growing danger. His owner, Roland Hendel, was forced to evacuate, heartbroken, knowing if Odin would survive. But Odin didn't run. As the fire raged, he led the goats to a rocky area he instinctively knew was safer and stayed with them throughout the night. Days later, the family returned expecting ashes, but Odin came limping towards them, burned and injured, with all 8 goats safe. Wow. Even more incredibly, he had also protected several baby deer that had joined the herd. Odin's loyalty and courage saved lives. Bred for generations to guard livestock, he lived up to his legendary and in most extreme conditions. His story became a symbol of hope, love, and unbreakable bond between animals. In the face of disaster, Odin proved that true heroes don't flee, they stay. That's a true story. That's Odin, yeah. That's really unbelievable how the dog, you could look him up and see pictures of him. His owners took pictures of him as soon as he was rescued, so...
Right.
Yeah, but all 8 goats survived and a couple of baby deer. So there you go. So we have crows that come in our backyard all the time. They're literally go on the telephone wire and on top of our garage and they squawk at us because they know that we throw them peanuts and seeds and stuff.
They give gifts, though.
They do give gifts. They leave Robert feathers. They're big, black, beautiful feathers. That we found. But here's a little story. Have you ever crossed a crow or did bad things to a crow, right? Because they will remember, not just for a day, not just for a season. We're talking years, entire generations even. Crows have one of the most advanced memories in the animal kingdom. They recognize human faces, pass along information through their family lines, and aren't shy about holding a grudge. These aren't your average birds. They attend crow funerals, use tools, and even have regional dialects. If you're lucky enough to befriend one, they might bring you shiny gifts. Right. But if you wrong one or anyone in their murder, and their murder is their group, they'll make sure the whole sky knows about it. This is not superstition. This is science.
Wow.
Yes. So there's a story about a little girl in England who was walking with her mom to school and saw this crow. So she decided to bring peanuts. And the little girl every day would bring a pocket full of peanuts and feed the crow on the way to school and leave the peanuts for the crow. And this particular crow would find little shiny objects around, all kinds of things, and leave them for her, like on her stoop.
Wow.
And she got a little like a shadow box, and she kept all the stuff that the crow left her.
Oh.
And it was like really cute little things, like little paper clips or like broken jewelry, all kinds of anything shiny the crow brought her and left it. Isn't that sweet?
That's cool. That's very cool.
I know. And we have this one crow. We can't really differentiate one from the other because they look all alike, but there's one that limps. Yep. We just call him, oh, Limpy's here.
That has his mouth open too. He's That was weird.
Well, that was weird, but I think it was on a really, really hot day. We put this hose out for him and put the water on like a shower spray, and then like three of them were like in our grass just rolling around doing a bird bath. It was really kind of unbelievable. Cool. Yeah, good news here. I have paws up for Rhode Island. New law bans cat declawing effective September 1st. So I'm really happy about that. New York is another state. I don't know what other states have the cat declawing law into effect, but I think it's a really great thing to do that. So
yeah, it's just not a thing, Wendy. You've talked about it over the years that it's like pulling our nails out. A human's nails.
Yeah, it's not even pulling the nail. They cut the knuckle, like the first knuckle off. Yeah, so it's really amputation. I had to be educated about this because I didn't realize that also. I just thought it was like pulling the nails out. And, even though that's bad, but it's literally amputation, and a lot of vets won't do it. That's something here we've been working on with being a policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals that we're trying to get passed here in Minnesota. So we're working on that, little by little. We want our state here, Minnesota, to be a humane state for animals. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you know wolves and ravens? So raven is like a crow, but they're bigger. They have rounded beak.
Huh.
Yeah. And they're supposed to be even smarter than crows. So, did you know that wolves and ravens share an unexpected bond in the wild, almost like a natural friendship? Ravens often follow wolf packs, feeding on their remains of their kills, while wolves seem to tolerate and even play with them. It's rare cross-species connection built on trust, cooperation, and survival. So these ravens follow the wolves around, and the wolves will, kill an animal to eat it, and then the ravens get to eat as well.
They get to join in the feast.
They do. They're like a symbiotic little companionship there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Unbelievable.
Hey, wow, great information as always. Wendy Pilot with our sacred animal portion of the show. Always great to get input and to even talk about stories that we've talked about before. It's awesome.
Always.
Hey, everyone, have a great weekend. This is Native Roots Radio signing off.
We live on an industrial reservation.
Pinigi again for listening to Native Roots Radio.
The Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. have been called many names. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the human beings, the callers of names.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with